podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Hello, everyone. I'm Jen, and tonight I'm joined by Karen and Michal. Hello, everyone. You guys were here last week.
I know. Yay. I missed you guys. It was weird.
It was very odd. It was just me and Marima, and we had Brittany on as a guest.
That's cool, though.
It was. She had a really good time because she's like a diehard John Green, Fault in Our Stars fan, so she was really fun. But she was really, like, she was very good about, like, pointing out things that she didn't like, and she was really good. I liked it. So Brittany has got a free pass for whenever she wants to come on, we told her. We'll give her a call, you know. She's on standby. So, let's start off with what you guys have been reading, because neither one of you has been on in the last couple weeks. So, what have you been up to?
Well, I am reading... I just finished The Emperor's Blades by Brian Stavely, which is a fantasy-type novel thing. And it was pretty good. Probably like a 3.5 out of 5. And I've been reading more than that. I'm also toying with what's it called? The Five Kingdoms by Brandon Mull. I got a copy of the first
book.
Very
nice.
Yeah, I think it's called Sky Raiders, I think it's called. Sorry, I'm really tired. And yeah, so that that's interesting. I don't read a ton of middle grade, but so yeah, it's cool. It's nice to kind of be in that zone. I'm also going to be starting The Young World by Chris Weitz at some point. Oh, and this week I'll be reading something else, but I'll talk about that later.
Okay. And Karen, what have you been reading?
I've been reading a lot because it feels like I've been reading a lot because I haven't been on for a while, but I read The Staff of Serapis by Rick Riordan, which is his crossover short story that he does between two different series. One's the Egyptian mythology series, the other one's the Greek and Roman mythology series. And the first one, Son of Sobek, I liked it, but it wasn't like, whoa. This one I thought was whoa. It was really, really good. And there's going to be a third one, so I'm really excited for that to come out. And I feel like I finished a lot of books that I had said I started a while ago. So I finished Book Thief and Eleanor and Park. Book Thief was good. I'm glad Marima's not here. But I already told her this, actually, so it's okay. But it was hard for me to get through that one. It was just a really dense book, but it was really, really beautifully written, and I loved it anyway. But Eleanor and Park, like, totally stole the show for me. I was kind of reading them at the same time, and it was so good. So good. I'm glad you guys made me read that. And
see?
Yeah, I know. and then I read My Last Kiss and Fan Art, both of which I will talk about in a little bit.
Awesome, awesome. I have once again been slacking this week. I've been in D.C. for the last, like, 4 days because I was at the Kennedy Center going to see preview night for Sideshow, which is a musical that came out in the 1996, I think it was, and has been revived by Bill Condon, who was the director for the last two Twilight movies. He's won an Oscar for, I forget which film, it might have been Writing Gods and Monsters, but he's also directed Dream Girls, and he did stuff for Chicago, the movie. So he's definitely into, like, musical theater stuff, which is awesome. And Sideshow was really, really cool. So that's kind of where my week went, was spending some time down in D.C. and getting to see that. I did start a new book called Dark Metropolis, and it's by Jackie Joldemar. And it comes out in a couple of weeks. And it's kind of cool. I really like the vibe of it because it's set in, like 1930s, 40s kind of town where she works as a waitress in this club, and it's just got a really, really cool vibe to it. There's some magic involved, even though magic is kind of outlawed, and so I really like it so far, so I will keep you guys posted on that one next week. But I do really like the vibe of it. It's got a pretty cool feel. So that's what I've read thus far this week, which is not a lot. It's kind of sad, actually. All right, so let's get on to our Book Bites topic. And our BookBytes topic today is trends we want to see. So, Michal, do you want to start with that?
This is just something I was thinking about, and obviously publishing goes through trends. Young adult is maybe like somewhat more susceptible to that. And I was just wondering, it's sort of been vampires in the past. Nobody needs to, not know about that. Aliens are having a little bit of a renaissance. So, I mean, personally, like I like the creature thing, obviously. Like I write about dragons. I would love to see more like interesting kind of creatures. I'm a little bit over like the whole people get supernatural powers thing. But yeah, and anything that kind of mixes like magic, but not like spell magic, with like the real world. So what do you guys think?
I think for trends right now, what's gonna, which is already kind of coming up, and you'll start seeing it more and more, is the suspense novel. I think that's gonna be a big one. So we're gonna probably hit a really big stretch of realistic fiction, especially with the success of The Fault in Our Stars and all the other realistic fiction that's been optioned for film. I think we'll probably get a large stretch of that, and we're also gonna get a big stretch of, like I said, suspense. There are a ton of novels coming out now that are suspense or thriller of some sort, even a little bit of horror, in YA. And then there's also this kind of big push in the realistic fiction, which I like. I like the suspense and the thriller stuff. I think it's really good. Some really good ones that came out recently were Jennifer L. Armentrout's Don't Look Back, We Were Liars. You guys all know how we felt about that one. So that kind of thing I think is gonna make a big push because there's been a lot of success with writing that. I also think eventually further down the road we'll probably get some more high fantasy stuff. I mean, with the success of Game of Thrones, again, you're gonna kind of see that. And I think also with Outlander coming out in August, I think again you'll see kind of that shift because trends tend to move towards what can is easily adaptable and can be crossed over in some sense. So I think you'll kind of see some more of that as well eventually because of those two things. What do you think, Karen?
I am all for more suspense and horror stuff. I really like the young adult novels that are more adult than they are young. It's something that I've been leaning towards recently, which is really weird because I'm sure you guys know, like, I'm a huge wimp, and for the longest time, I wouldn't watch anything scary. Like, I remember not watching Buffy because I was really terrified of it and I thought I was gonna have nightmares. And now, like, that's really what I'm leaning towards, and I really wanna see some of the darker fiction pop up a bit more. I think people will be really into it, especially as, the people that kind of came in on the whole Harry Potter ride start to grow older. I think we're always gonna like that kind of stuff, but it's gonna be really cool to see things go maybe a little bit darker. But also, and this will be no surprise, I would love to see more mythological based books pop up, Greek and Roman, I mean anything really, but something that is maybe a level above the Percy Jackson stuff. I love Percy Jackson, but it is middle grade and it tends to get a little silly, which is fine, that's the point. But I'd love to see more of a realistic look at it and maybe seeing, those sort of things in the modern day. I think that could be really cool.
That would be super fun. Who doesn't love Greek gods? I mean, come on.
And there's
Can't really
so
go wrong with
much, yeah,
that.
there's so much that you could do with it, so many different spins that you can put on it, and a lot of the stories that we have now anyway are based off of those. Like, there's really no end to which direction you could go in.
Exactly. So there's a lot, I know, there's so many ways things could go, and you never know. It all really depends on what people are also writing. I mean, people aren't always writing what's coming out or what seems to be on the brink, but I think, it'll be interesting to see what comes up next in the writing process for everyone. So yeah, I think it'll be good. We'll have to wait and see. Karen, do you want to give us your thoughts on The Fault in Our Stars? Because I know you went to see it, even though you couldn't discuss it with us last week. So go ahead, lay it on us.
Okay. I liked it. I'll start off by saying I was a big fan of the book. I really enjoyed the book. The movie was good. It was very much like the book. I mean, they took a lot from that and basically just made it into a visual representation of the book, which I think is fine and it worked really well. It didn't hit me as hard as I thought it would. Literally, we had people handing us boxes of tissues going into the theater, and somebody standing at the doors after the movie was over with a box of tissues. So, and I
That's
mean,
really funny. That's
yeah,
super funny.
I was like, wait, are you serious? And she was like, the person handing me the tissues was like, yeah, take them. You're gonna need them. And I didn't need them. I was actually kind of upset. But
You didn't cry?
no, I didn't cry. I know, I know.
Karen.
Let me explain though. I'm not a soulless monster. I said this on Twitter. I figured out why I didn't cry. It's because the movie made me really happy. And I know that's really weird to say, but the book kind of made me feel that same way. And it's because you're so happy that the two of them had their little, slice of infinity together and they had those moments. And I think the life that they led was really, really beautiful. And the movie was super funny. I mean, I was laughing so much and I was smiling like an idiot through so much of it because you totally fall in love with Gus even more than you did before. And I think they really pulled that aspect of the book out really, really well. And yeah, the ending was tragic and it was sad. And I got a little teary-eyed, but I wasn't sobbing like the entire theater was. And I think it's because by the end of it, I was just happy with the story, I think.
Okay, that's fair. It's still like, I think for me, when I see things that are visual that way, that are like visually tormenting in a sense, that it's so hard to not succumb to the tears. And for me, were there people crying around you in the theater, Karen?
Oh yeah, they were really
Okay.
loud. Like
I was, and that's what happened. Like for me, I was in the theater and it was like surround sound ugly cry. So I was like, ooh, it's gonna
such
hurt. Okay.
ugly crying. People were like heaving with sobs. Like
Yes,
it was really
exactly.
bad.
Okay.
Well, I didn't like it.
Okay.
At all?
Oh, I didn't see it, but I'm just saying I didn't like
Okay, good. And we're gonna leave that at that. Just let that one go.
Send your email.
Yeah, right. To Michal, please. Directly. Please don't send it to me. I said I liked it. We talked about it last week. We're all good people. But moving on. So this summer on Stars, there's going to be the Outlander series. Do you guys know about this Outlander series?
I've heard much and more about it.
Oh, yes. Well, so we're going to suggest that you guys try out audible.com for your book listening needs, as it's easy to use and an excellent selection of audiobooks to choose from. So we're going to suggest that you guys check out Outlander by Diana Gabaldon, because the TV series is coming and you guys are going to want to have listened to slash read the book before you get to the series, because trust me, it's going to be one of those things that you're kind of going to get addicted to. So for a free audiobook of your choosing, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype and check out Outlander. All right, so right now we are going to discuss some of our summer reading picks for everyone to think about over the summer and maybe pick up at their beach read or vacation read or just for their downtime and pleasurable reads. We have quite the list, actually. Mikhail has like the biggest list. I kind of went on the short side. I cheated. But the other thing is, listeners, if you have things that you think you should definitely read over the summer, or maybe books that you read like every summer just as kind of like a tradition, absolutely tweet those to us or put them in the comments so we can see what you guys are talking about and what you guys are interested in reading as well. Because I'm always curious as to what everyone reads. I feel like summer is that time where you just kind of laze around by like the pool or the lake or the beach or whatever and just like read and enjoy and relax. Because it's kind of nice when it's warm to be outside and doing something totally leisurely. Is that what you do, Mikhail? Do you go relax outside and read a book or no?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure if you're being serious or not.
Oh no. No, every Saturday. That's basically how I spend my time.
I was left in limbo on that one.
No. I'm saying like that because I literally like look forward the whole year to doing that. So.
That's the best part of the summer right there.
Yeah.
Why don't you go ahead and start with your list because you have some good ones on there.
All right. It's also funny because I was like, I don't know any books that are coming out in the summer. Why are you doing this to me, Jen? And then I was like, oh, wait. So first off, I'm really looking forward to Ruin and Rising by Leigh Bardugo, which is coming out on Tuesday or... did come out on Tuesday, depending on when you're listening to this. It's the third book in her Grisha trilogy, and the final one. And I'm just, really looking forward to it. I think it's a fun story. It's like Russian high fantasy-ish, and I like it a lot. So if you haven't read those, check them out. Next up is The Kiss of Deception by Mary Pearson, which I think I talked about a while ago when I was reading The Ark. I didn't love this book because it's a romance, but I think if you do like romance, you will like this book. I'll just leave it at that. I'm also looking forward to Queen of the Tearling, which is also coming out on July 8th, which I just looked up. And even though by now, like, I've been asking, like, every time I've seen Jen, I've been like, so what about The Queen of the Tearling? And she's like, yeah, you might not like it. And now I'm like, I'm going to hate this book.
No, I said, I think there are a couple items with which you will take issue.
Okay. So I'm really interested to read it.
The overall story is fantastic. Like, it's epic. It's everything you're going to want it to be. But there are a couple things your feminist heart is probably going to want to stab.
Oh.
I'm just going to put it out there.
Okay. All right. So that's super interesting. So I'm really excited to read that and get angry.
I have, like, tears in my eyes right now.
I'm also looking forward to The Young World by Chris Weitz, which I have an ARC of and will start reading at some point, which is coming out on the 29th of July. And also, because I'm cheating a little bit, The Infinite Sea by Rick Yancey, which is the sequel to The Fifth Wave, is coming out in September. And I'm really looking forward to getting my grubby hands on that and seeing all the misery that he puts everybody through, because that is just what he does.
As you do. All right, yes. Karen, what do you have?
All right. I have less than we call, but hopefully they're just as good. The first one is My Last Kiss by Bethany Neal. I just finished reading this one a week or two ago, and it is so good. So, so good. It's about this girl who dies. She's dead right at the beginning of the book, so that's not a spoiler or anything. And she has to figure out how she died. And I know the title of the book, My Last Kiss, makes it seem like, oh, it's about this romance. And in a way it is, but it's about so much more than that. And the way that the author kind of unravels the mystery by these flashbacks that the main character goes through and getting kind of sucked into these memories just makes it so interesting. And I couldn't put the book down. It was really, really good. I would suggest it to pretty much anyone. I think it's one of those reads that is just a lot of different people can like it for a lot of different reasons. And then Graduation Day by Joelle Charbonneau, and I've talked about this one before. It's the last in a trilogy, her testing trilogy, so you'd have to read the other ones. But I think the last book is absolutely the best book. It really makes you think. It's got a lot of action in it, but at the same time, a lot of it is so cerebral that you really have to sort of think about everything the main character is doing and her choices and what those consequences are. And it kind of poses a lot of really big questions, like, would you be willing to kill a few people to keep a lot more people alive, and the role of the government and society and all this sort of thing. So I think it's one of those books that if you like pondering those questions that happen to pop up in dystopian novels a lot, this one I would recommend. And then the last one I have is Fan Art by Sarah Tregay, and that one was not quite what I was hoping it would be. I kind of wanted it to be a little bit deeper than it was. It's about this boy who falls in love with his best friend, Mason, another boy, and he's in high school, and he has to kind of figure out what that means and what he's going to do about it. And it's a lot about, you know, being in the closet in high school and figuring out if you want to stand up for your rights or just kind of go through the motions and, you know, come out later, maybe in college when you're more comfortable with it. And it's a very light read. And I don't say that as a bad thing. I think that's a good thing in a lot of ways. I kind of wanted it to pack a little bit more of a punch, but overall, it was really good. A little bit slow, but the slow burn, I think, works for some people. So I'd recommend that one, too.
Awesome. All right. For me, I have Open Road Summer, which is already out. It's a really, really cool book about road tripping with your best friend who happens to be a pop star, a country pop star. And so it's about these two girls who, one of them just had her heart broken and swears off boys forever. And her best friend is a country pop singer who's got a 24-city tour. So the two kind of go on the road together. And of course, there are hijinks and really fun stuff. It's a really fun, light read. And I enjoyed it. It was quirky and fun. And it kind of takes you through a different aspect of things, you know, as friends. You know, what if your best friend was Taylor Swift-ish, you know? So it was, not that I like Taylor Swift, I'm just using that as an example. So it was kind of cool. The other one is called Traitor's Blade, and it comes out in July. And this one is super cool. They're pitching it as The Three Musketeers meets The Game of Thrones, which is kind of exciting. And it's about this group of men called the Great Coats, and they were the protectors of the king in this land called Tristia. And what happens is everyone's crooked, and so the king dies, and all of the dukes start to fight for the throne. And the Great Coats are kind of disbanded and sent off, much like the Three Musketeers were. And there's one Great Coat who was left with a kind of a journey. That's not the right word I'm looking for. I can't think of the right word at the moment. That he has to fulfill for the king before he died. So he takes his two best friends, and the three of them set out to kind of figure out what's really going on and who's behind everything. And so it's kind of this really cool, epic story. So it's really cool. And it comes out in July. Then there's The Vanishing Season, which came out on Tuesday. And it's super cool because it's told from the point of view of a ghost. So I kind of liked it just because it was super different in that regards. Like, how many times do you have the ghost actually telling you the story? So I thought that was pretty cool. And it's about this kind of combination of ghosts and residents and things that come through the ghost and how the ghost sees things. And I'm probably not explaining it very well, but it is really good, I promise. So check out The Vanishing Season. And the last one is called Vivian Divine is Dead. I feel like I'm like taking on a death tone, much like Kyle used to. It's not good. But Vivian,
that's summer reading.
It's supposed to be light and fun. You're supposed to spook yourself a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Vivian Divine is Dead is about this girl who is a movie star, and she starts getting these letters in the mail that are death threats. And so she kind of goes on the run. And as she's on the run, she realizes that the skills she's learned as an action star aren't nearly enough to help protect her and save her. So she somehow ends up in Mexico, and she's on the run, and she meets this boy who's nice and nothing like the boys in Hollywood, but she still feels like he's not being completely truthful with her. So it's kind of about this story about being on the run and figuring out who you are and who the people around you are. And it's just really cool. So kind of like a road trip, but more deadly, if you will. Anyway, so that's what I have. Another one that's really good is called Don't You Forget About Me. Again, a very murderous vibe to it. These people live in the town called Gardnerville. And in Gardnerville, no one gets sick and no one ever dies. Except there's always a price for magic like that, right? Or if it's magic, there's always a price. So every fourth year, this strange power that fuels the town comes in, and the payment is that it infects the teens with deadly urges. So the story focuses on Skylar, who her sister 4 years earlier was infected, and she led 16 of her classmates to their death, like in the water, they drowned. And so Skylar's tried to always forget it. She tries to push it away, and she's very numb. But now that it's 4 years later, it's basically Skylar's turn. And so Skylar, instead of being infected like everyone else to get the deadly urge to kill people or to do stuff like that, she kind of starts to hear whispers how to stop the murderous cycle once and for all. So that one's pretty cool too. It's strange, but it's cool.
That one sounds really good, actually.
Yeah, so it's called Don't You Forget About Me. So,
Yeah, I've been hearing buzz about that.
yeah, it's pretty cool. So those are my choices for the summer. And I'm sure I'll have more as I get through the other things that I have to read, because I have some things that I need to really get through.
One or two, right, Jen?
Just a handful, nothing big. All right, so Karen, we're gonna hop to some book news right now, and you are gonna fill us in on some Rick Riordan news, because he just updated a couple days ago with what his big plans are for writing,
Oh my
correct?
gosh. Yes, so much. I'm so excited. Okay, so basically, I mean, this well, first one isn't really news, but Blood of Olympus comes out on October 7th. It's basically in the final stages. It's all written. It's getting like put together to be released and everything. So it will come out on time because he always gets people asking him, "Oh, can the book be released earlier?" And he says no every time. I don't know why anyone asks anymore. But yeah, that will come out on October 7th, right on time. And the most exciting part is that he's started a new series, which we knew was in the works, but it's official. He's begun writing his Norse series book. And the first title we're going to find out at the end of Blood of Olympus. And we're also going to get a hint at who the main character might be. So, Mikal, I know you really like Percy Jackson and all of that. Do you have any ideas for what, who the main character could be?
Oh man, is this someone like we're supposed to know or?
No, I don't think so. I think he's going to give us a hint as to who the godly parent of the main character could be. And I'm really, really hoping that it's Loki, because he
I'm
said,
always hoping that
yes.
well,
it
I
doesn't
mean.
matter what it refers to, by the way. That can be just, you can fill it in. It's a Mad Lib. I still hope that it's Loki.
This
Okay,
has
we
nothing to
definitely.
do with Tom Hiddleston. Just throwing that out there.
Oh,
We need
so
a
you
Loki
say.
Mad Lib right now. Somebody get on that, please. We will read it next episode if someone comes up with a Mad Lib for us. I am just saying.
Oh man, but he Riordan has said in the past that Loki is his favorite Norse god, so I think it would be really cool to have the main character be the son or daughter, preferably daughter, just throwing that out there, of Loki. I think that would be a really big change for the series that we've from the series that we've had so far.
That would be super cool.
I'm really interested. I mean, I'm interested to see his take on it. I'm interested. Heck, I'm interested to learn more about Norse mythology because, let's get real, I'm not doing this research on my own.
Clearly, unless it has Tom Hiddleston involved, then it's not that interesting. Practical.
Even if it has a Tom Hiddleston involved.
Wow.
I mean, I mean, if Tom is going to sit next to me in the library, that's a completely different
Invite me.
thing.
Okay, we
Oh,
are
you wish,
so
Karen.
far off track right now, Lizzie.
We are still talking about Percy Jackson because I
Kind
was
of.
about to get around to that.
Right.
Because I'm really interested to see whether this book follows the Percy Jackson model, which is like the, standard one main character, first person, or if he goes more King Chronicles, which is, two perspectives, but both first person, or if he goes Heroes of Olympus, which is, everybody talking at you in different chapters, but third person. So I'm very interested to see, what tact he
What
takes
style he
on that.
chooses.
Yeah,
See? Relevant.
that's good. That's a good question, actually. I mean, I kind of feel like, not that the perspective had anything to do with this, but I mean, Percy Jackson and the Heroes of Olympus series were so much bigger than the King Chronicles series. And I think that was for a lot of different reasons. So I kind of wonder if he will be taking after the Percy Jackson model a bit more, but I also think that maybe people just aren't into the Egyptian mythology as much, and considering how big Thor and Loki are right now, even if it is just, you know, superhero Avenger stuff, I think people are really going to grab onto this series, or at least that's my hope, because I know a little bit about this mythology, but not nearly the extent of, like, Greek mythology, so I'm interested in learning more, too, and kind of comparing the stories to, like, the actual myths, which I think is always fun. But that's kind of a good segue into one of the other things that he's working on, which is Percy Jackson's Greek Gods. And that is a book about the actual Greek mythology, but it's told from the point of view and in the voice of Percy Jackson. And as soon as I heard about this, I got really excited, because if anyone's read these books, they know Percy is really funny and really sassy, and he has this really great way of looking at things. And I think this could be so cool and a great way to introduce the actual myths to kids. And I mean, I'm definitely going to get this. Like, I have 10 books on Greek mythology right now sitting to the left of me, and I don't even care. I'm still going to buy this thing because it looks gorgeous. The guy who did the art for all of the books, John Rocco, he did the art for this one, and this thing is huge. It's like a coffee table book, and I think it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, they were when I was at BEA, I was at a Disney dinner, and they were both there, and they got up and spoke about this, and it sounds so cool. And the two of them, Rick Riordan and John Rocco together, are just so funny. And so I could see how they could, like, do some really cool stuff with, you know, what Rick Riordan is working on and how John Rocco, like, envisions it. I think it'll be really cool.
Jen, don't even talk to me right now. I can't.
Did we tell her how close we were to Rick Riordan? We were like a foot and a half away from Rick Riordan.
Yeah, I was not going to rub it in. We don't do that. We just say we're there.
I'm not rubbing anything in. I'm reporting the facts, okay? Right. Uh-huh. It's news.
Anyway.
We're so close, I'm telling you.
I'm like really jealous. But I'm really happy that you guys were there. And I think that that's really cool. Because, I mean, those two guys have been together for a really long time. He did the art for the very first Percy Jackson book.
Right.
And I don't know when that first came out, but it was a while ago. Early 2000s, I think. So I can imagine their friendship is pretty solid at this point, and that they really play well off of each other, not just in person, but like you said, with the art and kind of, you know, John Rocco knowing what Riordan wants and that sort of thing. So
yeah. And John Rocco's artwork is gorgeous, because he's done, almost positive he's illustrated some children's books as well. And they're stunning. Like, they're so cool. So I love his artwork. It's awesome. So I think the combination of the two together in a book rather than just a cover and, you know, the story, mm-hmm. I think it'll be really cool to see.
Yeah, I'm so excited. And, you know, speaking of art, a lot of people weren't really cool with the art for the fifth Heroes of Olympus book, Blood of Olympus. They weren't happy that all of the demigods weren't on it. And, just, I think, the general layout, which, I mean, that's fine. It's not super exciting. I didn't think it was bad, but I could see why people wouldn't necessarily be into that. But a fan created a poster of what they would like the book cover to look like, and it's gorgeous. It follows pretty much the same style. It's a little bit different, but it's got a lot of the same tones and that sort of thing. And it has all of the demigods on it, and it looks so cool. And actually, Disney licensed this person's fan art and is going to make it into a poster and put it into the books they're selling at Walmart. It's going to be like a Walmart exclusive thing. And I think that is so amazing, and I kind of want to get my book from Walmart now, because this poster looks awesome.
That's really cool.
That's awesome that they did that.
Yeah.
I will say, I wasn't especially – I talked about this with Karen. I wasn't especially blown away by the cover. It's fine, but, I mean, the cover for House of Hades was, like, so viscerally exciting, and, you know, and this is just, like – all right. I mean, like, I wanted something black. I wanted something that, like, channeled the darkness of, like, everything. I mean, you know, and it's a little bit like, oh, look, there's Jason hopping down from the thing with a lightning bolt and Jason Grace. He's the son of Zeus. He's awesome. anyway, yeah, so, but yeah, link that, Karen, because I'd love to see it. I'd really love to see that poster.
Yeah, I'll definitely put it in the show notes and I'll send it to you as well.
Awesome. All right, so we're going to move on from all the Rick Riordan news, and we're going to talk a little bit about We Were Liars. I know it feels like we just talked about this as, you know, a book discussion, but We Were Liars was actually just optioned for film. And the interesting thing is that E. Lockhart is the one writing the script.
Ooh.
Right. I find that super fascinating because it's so rare that authors actually are hired on to adapt the script as well. The only other one that I know is doing it is Rainbow Rowell for Eleanor and Park.
Oh.
So, I know.
I'm like 10 times more excited about that now, just saying.
So I think it's really interesting that they've picked it up and that they're setting it in motion. And if I read the thing correctly on Deadline Hollywood, it says that she actually has already written the script. So I don't know if this has been kind of all in the process. It was a bidding war. Lots of people went after it. So it'll be interesting to see where it lands and how it all works out. But I don't know if a movie can sustain this same thing that the book did. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was just
that's my only concern.
Because, I mean, it's sort of this sleight of hand thing with the book that you don't really see the end coming. And I don't know with a visual film if you right. can actually pull that off. Although, obviously, that's like kind of the point of the book. So I think they're going to try to do it. And if they can pull it off, it's going to be really awesome. But maybe it'll just have to be, I don't know, a little jumpier or something to kind of like.
Maybe, but like the reality of it is they did pull it off with like the Sixth Sense and like, do you know what I mean? Like they can make it happen. It just has to be really savvy and shot really in a particular fashion. So I'll be interested to see if they can pull it off just because of the way the story is constructed. So, and that's what, there's so many things that make that story like perfect that I don't know if it'll translate as well to screen. Like, I don't want to lose some of the language and how beautifully written it is. And I know that would be probably Marimo's big thing, is she is all about the prose of that story. So translating that to a screen is really challenging. So I guess we'll see. In other adaptation news, do you guys know that it's called The Duff by Cody Kiplinger? Or Cody Kipling? Is that how you say her last name? Yes.
Yes, her agent is Joanna Volpe, who we had on.
Oh, yes. Agents. That's correct. Well, The Duff was optioned as a film, and it's actually just finished casting, and it's going to start filming really, really soon. And it's kind of interesting, because there wasn't a lot of news surrounding this movie. In case you don't know, The Duff stands for The Designated Ugly Fat Friend. And this book came out probably about 4 or 5 years ago. So it was quite a while ago. And it's a really kind of fun, realistic look at, I think, like circles of friends in high school and how people see each like member of a clique or a group. And it's really interesting to as a read. It'll be interesting to see what they do with it as a film. And cast as Bianca, who is the one known as the Duff, is Mae Whitman, who lots of people really wanted Mae to play Hazel. But Mae will play Bianca in the Duff. Also in the cast is Robbie Amell from The Tomorrow People, Bella Thorne from Blended, Bianca Santos from The Fosters, and Ken Jeong from Community. So it's got a really interesting cast in it as well. So it'll be cool to see how it kind of plays out on screen. And I know I saw Cody on Twitter the other day saying that she was getting ready to head to set. So it'll be interesting to see what she reports as well and how she's feeling about it. Do you guys have any thoughts about that one?
I thought it was a TV show, not a movie, but I'm probably wrong. No, I think it's cool. I think it's, you know, again, sort of more representation. You know, is always a good thing. I know a lot of people really like Cody's books. I started The Duff, but I mean, again, you guys know it's like slightly more romance tinged and contemporary, so like not something that I necessarily like love, but I think a lot of people really like that book and really empathize with it. So yeah, I think it's great that they're that it's going well. And I love Mae Whitman. Who doesn't love Mae Whitman? She was the voice of Katara.
Exactly.
So, and which Karen you might know about soon, maybe. Secret.
Oh gosh. Yeah, this is kind of interesting. I'm kind of with Mikal in that, like, I tend to shy away from the contemporary stuff and the realistic fiction, and it's just not really my thing, but as I read more of it through this podcast, either with, you know, your guys' recommendations, which I trust 100%, or with the books that we read as part of, like, the book club, I realize that every time I do read the contemporary stuff, I really enjoy it. So I need to stop thinking of it as something that's just not my thing, because obviously these books are good. They have a huge fan base, and they have a lot that you can relate to. So I actually remember this book being a big thing when it came out. It's very familiar to me. Even the cover is very familiar to me, but I just never really gave it a second thought. But I used to see it in the store a lot and stuff. But I don't know. Maybe I'll give it a try. The movie sounds like it could be a really cool thing, too.
Yeah, what's really interesting is, and I know a lot of people said this in the comments of that post, was that the description that they're giving out for the movie is not the same as the description for the book. So I'll quickly read you guys the description for the book. It says 17-year-old Bianca Piper is cynical and loyal, and she doesn't think she's the prettiest of her friends by a long shot. She's also way too smart to fall for the charms of man slut and slimy school hottie Wesley Rush. In fact, Bianca hates him. And when he nicknames her the Duff, she throws her Coke in his face. But things aren't so great at home right now, and Bianca is desperate for a distraction. She ends up kissing Wesley. Worse, she likes it. Eager for escape, Bianca throws herself into a closeted enemies with benefits relationship with him, until it all goes horribly awry. It turns out Wesley isn't such a bad listener, and his life is pretty screwed up too. Suddenly, Bianca realizes with some absolute horror that she's falling for the guy she thought she hated more than anyone. So that is the actual book description. In our post, the description that they gave for the movie is this. Let's see. The Duff tells the story of teenage Bianca, whose life turns upside down after she discovers that the school has secretly dubbed her as the Duff, of her group of high school friends. Devastated, Bianca decides to enlist the help of her neighbor, Toby, to give her a makeover and help her overthrow high school queen bee and designated mean girl, Madison. Which does not sound anything like the book description.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure. We'll have to do some research on this and see if we can get some more information to kind of see which way it's going. Because I honestly don't know.
And the book, does she need a makeover?
The book exactly.
Honestly sounds like 100 times better anyway.
It really does, yeah.
I don't know why they would change it.
Exactly. I don't know. We'll have to see what happens. We'll have to go back and look or ask around, see if we can get some more information on what the movie will be like. We'll have to see. All right. So two last things to mention for this episode. There are two summer adaptations coming out in August and one in September. So it's not technically summer, I guess, but work with me. And that's The Giver and The Maze Runner.
Aww. So
I know Karen's like,
it's so close. I can almost feel it. Oh my gosh. Because it was supposed to come out
in February, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm glad that they pushed it back. I think that was smart. They can do a lot more with their marketing now. They can go to Comic-Con. They can get people hyped up. Makes sense. But I am desperate for this movie. I just need it.
Oh, and there's also If I Stay in August. I almost forgot that one.
Oh, yeah.
If I Stay. So there are three YA adaptations that I can recall off the top of my head coming out late summer. So right before you go back to school, you can get all your feels out with all these lovely books being adapted. So, yeah, that pretty much wraps up the summer recap episode or the summer preview episode, if you will, of Book Hype. And of course, you guys, as always, send us the things that you're reading and you're interested in for the summer, and we'll make sure we talk about them. For June, we are not going to end up having a book review episode just because it's already the middle of June and we got a little behind. totally on us. But we will be doing one in July, maybe two. We'll have to talk about it because we have Comic-Con, and the entirety of Book Hype will actually be at Comic-Con for a week. So that's, I know, crazy, right?
It's so cool.
It'll be fun. In fact, three of us will be rooming together. So
yes, live podcast. Just saying.
How many come out?
Oh.
It'll be good.
Yes. So it'll be pretty cool. I can't wait for all of us to kind of be out there and do stuff together, book and TV related, because it's always fun.
I'm really excited.
I know. I love it. There's going to be so much going on. That's going to be amazing.
Friends have been like, oh, I'm so jealous of you. And I've been like, you know, I'm kind of jealous of myself.
It's like, it's like an earth shattering experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it pretty much is.
We don't sleep, okay?
No. Like, and when we do, it's on the sidewalk.
This is so true. I'm a little afraid for who this year, I'm not going to lie, because it's the new guy and everyone's going to want to know, and oh, it's going to be brutal. But anyway, that's totally off topic. We'll talk about that closer to Comic-Con and all the, we'll tell you guys about all the cool things that we will cover then. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Michal.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.